I'm learning from the speaker. House Resources is called to order. President Representative Roses, Seaton, Guttenberg, and Edgman, and Co-Chair Johnson. Before us today, we have SJR 17 and SB 229. We will start with SJR 17, and I see the sponsor is in the audience. Mr. Wilkowski, welcome. I think this is the first time that I've seen you testify before this committee. It's good to have you.
It is, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm a state senator for Northeast Anchorage. And I think you have a little bit more fun in this committee than we have in Senate Resources.
Senator Wilkowski, having been in Senate Resources, I will have to agree. While the senator's gathering his composure, let the record reflect that.
All right, let's Wilson move his bill out.
This resolution calls on Congress to provide Alaska and other coastal states with a fair share of revenue from oil and gas leasing and development in the Outer Continental Shelf. As you know, the Mineral Lands Leasing Act of 1920 is the federal government. Under that act, the federal government shares with states 50% of revenue generated from mineral production on federal lands within each state's boundaries. The shared mineral revenue is distributed to the states automatically outside of any budget process. Unfortunately, there is no comparable authority for the federal government to automatically share revenue from oil and gas activities occurring 6 miles or more offshore with adjacent coastal states. For years, coastal states have argued that they deserve a share of OCS revenues because they provide the infrastructure that supports offshore operations and bear the environmental risks of offshore development. On several occasions, Congress has recognized this vital contribution and has created revenue sharing programs, most of which have been temporary or only extended to a handful of states. The most recent example is, the federal government agreed to give Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas 37.5% of revenue from oil and gas leasing and development in newly opened federal waters in the Gulf of Mexico. This act is expected to distribute more than $60 billion to those four states over the next 25 years. Alaska was excluded from this program despite the efforts of our congressional delegation. This resolution supports the position that all coastal states with adjacent OCS development should receive on a regular and ongoing basis a fair share of revenue from OCS activities as compensation and reward for their contribution to the nation's energy infrastructure. Since statehood, oil and gas activities from Alaska's Outer Continental Shelf have generated almost $6 billion for the federal government. This does not include the $2.6 billion the federal government earned in the last Chukchi sea sale. If the revenue sharing program, like the one that is currently in place in the Gulf of Mexico, had been in place just back in February when the sale took place, Alaska would have stood to gain $975 million from the sale alone. And more leasing and development are likely to occur in the future as two-thirds of the nation's Outer Continental Shelf is off the coast of Alaska, with as much as 55 billion barrels of technically recoverable oil and 280 trillion cubic feet of technically recoverable gas. The resolution has the support of Alaska's congressional delegation, the administration, and those coastal communities most affected by offshore oil and gas development, and I would urge your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Are there any questions?
Yeah, I guess it, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edgman.
Welcome, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you.
What we heard on the House side, I think it was Representative Samuels, said that he'd come back from the energy meetings, and it was Senator Bingham, I believe, who's the chairman of the Energy Committee, basically say that he never did support and wouldn't in the future support this taking place. But do you know anything further about the prospects in Congress of this actually happening?
I can only speak from what I've heard from my staffer, who's been in contact with Senator Ted Stevens' office on this matter. They've been urging us to push this resolution. They think it's important. And you're right, I was at Energy Council, but I heard the same things that Senator Bingham himself was not very supportive of any OCS revenue sharing. At the same time, it's also my understanding he said he's only one person and he wouldn't throw his body in front of someone else that tried to push it. My understanding is from the conversations with my staff, who had conversations with the congressional delegation, that Senator Baucus is interested in, Max Baucus from Montana, is interested in perhaps opening this revenue sharing up to other states, including Alaska. And so there are prospects of it happening. It's a challenge, there's no doubt about it. But I think from a fundamental standpoint of fairness, when four other states get this, there's really no fair reason why Alaska shouldn't get it as well.
The first whereas talks about the Minerals Leasing Act 1920, how the government shares with states 50% of revenue from mineral production. But this actually looks beyond just production, but looks at the sharing of exploration, and like you alluded to a moment ago about the Chukchi Sea.
Right, and the 50% of revenue is from mineral production on federal land within the state's boundaries. Mm-hmm. Within 0 to 3 miles, the states do get a small amount of compensation, but once you go past 6 miles, the states get nothing. And unfortunately, most of the Chukchi Sea sales were all beyond, or for the vast majority, beyond 6 miles, so we got nothing.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, how far does it go out with some of these other states that do get something?
I'm going to call my staffer Michelle up here. I know that in the Chukchi Sea, some of the sales were 60 miles out, and or possibly more, but I'm going to defer to her before I say something that's not completely accurate.
Would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Hi, for the record, my name is Michelle Seidem, and I'm staff to Senator Bill Wilikowski. Your question was how far out the revenue sharing programs go, and I believe they go out to the 200-mile limit that is the limit to defines the federal OCS.
Wow. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We passed a resolution earlier about law adopting or ratifying the Laws of the Sea Treaty. Is there any portion of this that would also apply to the extended jurisdiction, or I think it's silent, but I just wanted to check and see whether there's any notion of whether that would whether these provisions or what we're asking for would extend to that extended jurisdiction.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I believe that I'm not familiar with any OCS revenue sharing program that has looked beyond that 200-mile limit, and I imagine Law of the Seas applies to those waters that aren't within the jurisdiction of any nation, if that's correct. So I've never, in the decade or so that I've been involved in OCS discussions, never heard about any applicability beyond that level or beyond that limit.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Any additional questions for the sponsor or staff? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this resolution? We do have Kevin Banks online with DNR. Kevin, thanks for coming or attending today. Are you just here to answer questions, or do you have anything to add to this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Kevin Banks, the Acting Director at the Division of Oil and Gas. Just wanted to be here if there were any questions, but since you've called on me, I will certainly indicate the administration support for such a resolution. Seems only fair that we get the same kind of treatment as the four states, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, get for the Gulf of Mexico, especially with regard to the kinds of impacts that will fall on the rural communities adjacent to the OCS here in Alaska, where such a major industrialization as an oil and gas development will have a huge impact on those kinds of communities, too.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. I think Representative Seaton has a question for you.
Very good.
Thank you, and I'm not sure whether it's for you or the sponsor, so whoever would like to field it. I'm trying to figure out whether there's any impact related to OCS gas displace if we get a gas line that's going through, and if there would be bids from OCS where we get no revenue that would displace gas bids that would be applicable from state or federal lands. Do we have any mechanism for looking at that differential benefit to the state?
Through the chairman, Representative Seaton, I think the appropriate way to think about this is that development for, say, example, the Beaufort Sea and the Chukchi Sea is still fairly immature. So the state will certainly move gas, you know, presumably would move gas through a gas pipeline first. It's also a matter of, you know, the cost of development. You'd expect the cheaper, more inexpensive onshore gas would hit the pipeline before offshore gas would reach the pipeline. So I'm not exactly sure that I'll say two things about it. I'm not sure, too sure that we need to be concerned about displacement of state gas insofar as how OCS gas would line up with our own. And also, I think it's fair to say that it's something of it'll involve a certain amount of guesswork. If a very large project were to develop in the Chukchi Sea for gas, that could that would be self-supporting and meet needs for gas into the into some gas pipeline onshore. Of course, under current rules, we wouldn't get much revenue for it. Under current rules, we wouldn't get any revenue from it for the OCS. But would also string along a bunch of onshore projects that may be at the moment too small to reach the pipeline onshore, in which where we would share in 50% of the revenues.
Follow-up.
So I think in general we could say that OCS gas is not, you know, it would help a gas pipeline project, but you are correct. We would certainly get a lot less revenue for it.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton.
Thanks. I guess what the other portion of that question is, if we had producers that were the same producers onshore, offshore, had offshore fields, onshore fields, and they bid at open season for a certain amount of capacity in the gas line, is there anything that would prevent them from substituting offshore gas for which we would get no royalty or no production tax for the onshore gas from the leases through the pipeline?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think the answer is no. There probably isn't any mechanism at the FERC or even in the financing of the pipeline that would obligate a producer from producing its onshore gas before it produces its offshore gas.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton, or does that answer your
question? I guess one more follow-up, and that is just that then this resolution, if we would get a sharing of revenues, then that would be that would work definitely in our favor of making sure that onshore gas was, at least we got some benefit from offshore gas and wouldn't get the benefit displaced after going through all the work and mechanism of getting a pipeline. So it seems that this resolution or the sharing of those royalties would have the benefit, potential benefit to the state of one more reason why we would want to go forward with the gas pipeline or at least eliminate that causal concern that we would do all the work and wouldn't get any of the benefit. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, yes, it would be correct. It would certainly kind of level the playing field as far as we're concerned, wouldn't it, I think?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. And you never have to feel bad about not saying anything in this committee, so don't worry.
All right, thanks.
Is there any other one either online or in the audience who would like to testify on this resolution? With that, I will close public testimony. Committee discussion. Any questions, comments? Representative Roses.
I would move Senate Joint Resolution Number 17, Version C, from committee with individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Hearing none, SGR 17 passes out of committee. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you coming.
Thank you. And I will not relay those comments to the committee.
Appreciate that. Having fun is good. It's okay. Is Senator Thomas's staff available?
Good morning.
Okay, we'll take a brief at ease awaiting the arrival of the other good senator. Self and present SB 229 for us.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Excuse me, Senator, before you start, let the record reflect that Representative Kawasaki joined us quite some time ago. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman, Senator Joe Thomas, District D, here with a short explanation of Senate Bill 229. Senate Bill 229, excuse my froggy voice this afternoon.
Want some water?
Yeah, please.
Let the record reflect that we do treat senators special when they come to the resources.
Better treatment than I'm used to getting the other side.
That comment's been mentioned already in this committee. Yeah.
On the record as well.
We also didn't indicate what we
said it with conviction.
Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you. Senate Bill 229 amends the boundaries of the Tanana Valley State Forest to correct errors in legal descriptions, reflect updated land status, and to better match the management intent for the forest. This is done by adding and deleting boundary references to the legal descriptions in statute. These changes result in a net increase to the state forest of approximately 40,000 acres. SB 229 also moves approximately 4,300 acres from the state forest to the Minnow Flats State Game Refuge. In 1993, the legislature created the 1.8 million acre Tanana Valley State Forest that stretches from Manly to Tolk. The forest is open to mining, gravel extraction, oil and gas leasing, and grazing. The Department of Natural Resources manages the state forest for a sustained yield of these resources with the primary purpose of timber management. The Bonanza Creek Experimental Forest, a 12,400-acre area dedicated to forestry research, is also located within the state forest. State forests provide fish and wildlife habitat, clean water, opportunities for recreation and tourism, and minerals. In addition to the management of these resources, the Tanana Valley State Forest offers many recreational opportunities, including hunting, fishing, trapping, camping, hiking, dog mushing, cross-country skiing, wildlife viewing, snow machining, gold panning, boating, berry picking, just to mention a few. In 1996, the division updated the Tanana Valley State Forest Management Plan and established a Citizen Advisory Committee. The 12-member Citizens Advisory Committee, representing a variety of state forest users, actively participates in forest planning in the Tanana Basin. This entity has endorsed the recommendations on management of the forest and has carefully crafted the changes in a manner that resulted in support from all affected land users and owners. SB 229 is supported by the Alaska State Forest Association, the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, hunting and recreation groups, as well as all surrounding landowners. I ask that you please join me in amending the Tanana Valley State Forest to better align with its original intent and support the passage of Senate Bill 229. With me today is Marty Freeman, Forest Resources Program Manager for the Department of Natural Resources, and Greyer Hopkins of my office to explain and or answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Any questions of the sponsor, Representative Roses?
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Currently, the way this is structured, is there a permitting process or a fee structure that goes into place if you use any of this, take any recreation on any of this property?
No, it's my understanding the department would probably be better able. This is pretty much open land, and so as far as for recreational uses, that's not the case unless they've established some specific areas where they may do some charge, but I would have to defer and make sure that that's accurate. No fees.
Okay.
You additional questions? And I see that, Senator, that this results in a 35,000-acre increase in the park. Is that just from reading from your sectional analysis?
About a 40,000-acre increase to the forestry. Yes, that's right. Does not change any designations or anything like that, any uses of the land other than the very minor in the part that is put into the Minnow Flats State Game Refuge. And I think that's pretty much all open as well.
Thank you, and I don't know if Marty is the person to ask. What happens to the land and what type of designation is the deleted land? What will that fall under? If it becomes deleted, is that available for
general state, please, yeah, bring me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Marty Freeman, and I'm the Forest Resources Program Manager for the Division of Forestry. The lands that are deleted, there are 4,000 acres that are proposed to be added to the refuge that come out of the state forest. The remaining lands would be managed as part of the state public domain land and would be managed under the Tanana Basin Area Plan. Typically, the designations on most of these are for wildlife habitat and public recreation.
So I guess the question is, will that exclude any traditional uses on those lands? Will people still be able to hunt and fish and do the things that they were able to do prior to it being deleted from the forest?
Mr. Chairman, yes. It doesn't change the publicly, you know, generally allowed uses on those lands.
Okay. Any additional questions? And Marty, I did see that you were online, that you wanted to testify. So if you wanted to, at this point, we'll go ahead and open public testimony. Representative Edgeman. And let the record reflect that Representative Faircloth is joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple days ago, we heard a bill about Stampede State Recreation Area. And my question was, at that point, what was the difference between a recreation area and a park? Today, it's a state forest and a refuge. And so I guess I'm a little bit, maybe you could speak to the differences in these designations, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, a legislatively designated state forest, the first thing it does is it keeps the land in public ownership. It's not available for land disposal in terms of sale to private interests. It certainly can be leased or permitted for other uses and is actively used for forest management, for example. Second thing is that while it is managed for multiple use, it is clear that commercial forest management is part of the use for the state forest.
Representative Edgeman?
So do these different categories in the state statute, do they have different meaning under a land management plan? Is that what sort of differentiates them from each other?
Mr. Chairman, they each have their own special legislative designation. So first of all, the legislature would have to commit them to the particular use. When a state forest is established, then we do develop a specific management plan for each state forest. In this case, we have the Tanana Valley State Forest Management Plan.
Representative Benjamin, go ahead.
One last question. The management plan does not spill over then into the game refuge, the 4,300 acres. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative, that's correct. There's a separate management plan for the Minto Flat State Game Refuge.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Referring to the map, the yellow blocks, 12A and 13B down there on the bottom right, those lands are going from state forest to undesignated land. Is there particular reasons for those, and can you let us know what those reasons for those parcels leaving the state forest are?
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative Seaton. The three parcels that are in the farthest southeast area.
Excuse me, sir. Can you still hear her? Is she okay to hear away from the microphone like that?
Go ahead. Oh, there we go. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. The three parcels that are farthest in the southeast are wetland areas. They're mustangs. They're areas that really don't have forest potential. The fourth parcel in the northern end, similarly, it doesn't have commercial forest potential. It's high elevation land, though, in contrast. This, as we referred earlier, there was a drafting error in the original bill. The drafting error was that these two townships were flipped. Originally, the western one was supposed to be included. The eastern one was not. So this corrects that error.
Representative Seaton. So just to follow up, are there any of the parcels that are being deleted from the area that are actively being pursued for some other usage, private usage?
Representative Seaton. No specific other private usage. The three parcels that are in brown in the northwest end are the ones that are wetland areas that are proposed to be added to the Minto Flat State Game Refuge. Again, they don't have commercial forestry potential. The last parcel that's a deletion is along the Chattanooga River corridor. It is an area that's intensively used for public recreation, and there are many private inholdings within that area already.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I guess my question is, are we doing anything with the net loss of wetlands? You said it was marshy and muskeg, or if these are protected as wetlands and we take them out of a certain class, do we have to go someplace else now and find wetlands for any kind of no net loss situation like that?
Mr. Chairman, no, we don't. They still are retained in state ownership, and there's no current proposal to develop them for a particular use, so there's no change to their status in terms of wetland banking or mitigation.
Right. Representative Seaton.
Yeah, I just had one more follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The upper portion there, 4B, that's leaving the forest, which is has a fairly high usage and some inholdings. Now, my understanding is then the rest of that area would be open for disposal to the public, or could be then, after it's out of the state forest, available for disposal. I just want to make sure that whatever disposal there would be of those lands would be through a full and open public process, you know, whether it's home sites or whatever that is. Is that correct? There's no preferential ties to any parcels that are being pulled out of state forest at this time. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Seaton, that's correct. There's no presumption that they are available for land disposal. In fact, the parcels that are coming out, none of those are classified as settlement lands after they're out. They all happen to be wildlife habitat or public recreation, typically, simply because of the nature of the sliver along the corridor, and the rest are either wetlands or high elevation lands that really are low potential for settlement as well.
Thank you,
sir. We also have online David James with the Department of Fish and Game for questions, if anyone has any specific questions about that. Any other questions of Ms. Freeman or the sponsor? Representative Roses?
Thank you. Just for clarification purposes, I know I've taken a look at the long-range plan that the Alaska Railroad has, and I know there's some possibility of doing some of the expansion of the railroad to try and go out into developing the military training areas that they have to be able to put a spur line in to supply the equipment when they have their training facilities out there. Does this affect any of that area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roses, there's potential for rail extension to improve the access to some of our lands in terms of commercial potential for transporting timber resources. But I don't know that it goes through any of the parcels that are currently proposed for a change in status.
If it may follow up,
Representative Roses.
If it did, would putting this into the forestry or the game refuge prevent that from happening?
Mr. Chair and Representative Roses, no, it doesn't. In fact, the legislation that establishes the forest makes it clear that transportation is one of the uses for which it's established.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for the sponsor or Ms. Freeman? Mr. James, with the Department of Fish and Game, did you have anything to testify to, or are you simply here for questions?
Mr. Chair, this is David James. I'm simply here to answer any questions.
Thank you, David. With that, I will open public testimony. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this legislation? Is there anyone online who would like to testify on this? With that, I will close public testimony. Any discussion amongst the members regarding SB 229?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bettenberg.
I would consider it a friendly amendment if we could roll the Stampede rec area into this. But I will.
I probably would too. But
I'm not sure how friendly I would do.
I figure we leave well enough alone.
I do want to say I am somewhat encouraged that this is not becoming a park, which I think is. I'm not big on creating more parklands that basically tie up what little resources we have. I think the development, if this doesn't minimize development anyway, which I can't see that it does, I don't see a lot of problems with
this.
Any additional comments? Representative Wilson.
Are you ready for a motion?
Just give me a second. Any additional comments? Let me look around the room. I am Representative Wilson.
Final answer?
Final answer.
That was my final, yeah. I move Senate Bill number 229 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Any objections? Hearing none, SB 229 moves from committee. With that, I appreciate the expeditious work of the committee today. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Nothing? Going once? Going twice? Hearing none, we will stand in adjournment. I appreciate everyone's attendance today.
We almost got